Hey there, welcome to the Creative Classroom Podcast. I'm your host, John Spencer. I am a former middle school teacher, current college professor, and I am passionate about seeing teachers transform their classrooms into bastions of creativity and wonder. And I'm inspired by the great ideas that I see all the time from current classroom teachers. I'm inspired by the mistakes I see people make, myself included, and what we can learn from that. And so hopefully the goal here is to start a conversation, to get some ideas out on this journey toward making classrooms more creative. And today's particular topic doesn't at first glance have to do with creativity at all, right? It's about content curation, which is basically, you know, a part of critical consuming. And so at first it would seem like, you know, what does this have to do with, you know, helping students develop a maker mindset or helping them to become more creative? But the truth is, consuming and creating have a lot in common. And so I want to start there. When we think of creativity, it's easy to picture a person coming up with something entirely new, pulling it from thin air and making it from scratch. But if you watch people engaged in creative work, they are often critical consumers of the same type of work they create. There's this ongoing cycle of critical consuming, inspiration, and creative work. As they create more, it then leads to a deeper ability to consume critically, and then they find even more inspiration, and then this cycle continues. So you can think of it as a cycle that starts with critical consuming, leads to inspiration, that leads to creative work, and then back to critical consuming. And you see it all the time. Chefs enjoy great meals. Musicians enjoy great music. Engineers make sense out of what other people have designed. The better they are at consuming, the more likely they are to be inspired to create something new. So then if we want students to become makers, we need them to be critical consumers. But unfortunately, we live in this world of instant information. It's a place where ideas go viral without much thought into whether they're accurate or valid. It's a place where content is cheap to make, cheap to share, cheap to consume. The traditional gatekeepers are gone, which is on some level really, really good for our students. They can create and share their work in ways that was previously unimaginable. But there is a cost. The best stuff doesn't always rise to the top. And if we're not careful, we make the mistake of viewing the speed of consumption for the depth of knowledge. And this is why we need students to learn the art of curation. So what is content curation? In recent years, we've seen the rise in popularity of bloggers that specialize in content curation. You can think of Brain Pickings or Farnham Street, Open Culture, some of those types of sites. And in a world of instant information and content saturation, this curation concept has become a really critical skill. On some level, the gatekeepers are gone, but curators are sort of like the new gatekeepers. But curation goes beyond simply collecting items online. The best curators know how to find what is best by immersing themselves in a specific area while also making surprising connections between ideas in seemingly unrelated areas and worlds and contexts. Curators find specific excerpts that are relevant at the moment, but they also find ones that are also timeless. And this being relevant but being timeless piece is something that great curators do on a regular basis. They explain the purpose, the context, and the necessity of what they're citing, and they bring you in a way that feels really approachable. I'm kind of drawn toward the archaic definition of the term curation. It originally had a much more earthy, even gritty connotation. Some linguists tie it back to medieval Latin word curare, which meant to cure an illness. It had a connotation of providing loving attention and management, of being helpful to people. And at the same time, other linguists would tie curator back to the word curatus, which meant spiritual guide or one responsible for the care of the soul. By the way, if I'm butchering the Latin, it's because I don't speak Latin. Now, over time, this word morphed into a deep care and love for a particular subject or knowledge or set of artistic works. And if you think about art curators, for example, they're the ones that we kind of easily think about. They define the space of a museum. They know the works on a deep level, and they can explain the meaning and purpose in ways that become relevant to the viewers. Some of the best curators are able to tap into the original sense of being responsible for the care of souls. I love that idea. They think not only about what the work means, but how it will make you a better person. As teachers, we do this all the time. We help students grow in wisdom. We find things that they need. We are curators. And that's what we also want for our students. We want them to get an excited passion and a nuanced care for what they're learning. We want them to pay attention to the context and purpose of the information they consume. We want them making connections between ideas and providing their own lens. We want them to be critical consumers. So what does content curation actually look like? Content curation begins with an intense love of the content. Again, if you think about the gallery curators, they get giddy over seemingly random and yet almost impossible to replicate approach of a Jackson Pollock painting. But they can also engage in a two-hour conversation on the relationship between kitsch art and postmodern philosophy. There is a depth and excitement to their knowledge. And curators have a holistic, connected approach. They're able to think about, you know, again, how these ideas connect to one another. And so if you think about the role of critics, curators are kind of different. And here's what I mean. Critics often will tell you what you don't want. But curators are really focused on making the work accessible. So both curators and critics are again, on some level, gatekeepers of information. But the critics are focused often on shutting the gates and telling you where to go, whereas curators are often the ones who open the gates and find things that you hadn't seen before and try to convince people to come inside. And so that's the idea of kind of where the curator is sort of different than the commentator or the certainly to the critic. Now, if all of this seems too abstract, if I'm being way too broad here, I'm going to dive into what content curation actually looks like. So here's what content curators actually do. First, they search for the content. The best curators are the ones who find content that not everyone is noticing. This is what makes Maria Popova of Brain Picking so amazing. She has this way of finding content that people are missing and looking at places that we've overlooked. Number two, they geek out on the content. So the best curators are able to collect and consume great content. It's not mindless consumption here. It's mindful. It's relaxed, but it's also sharp and analytical. One of the things I've noticed about some of the best curators is that they will scribble notes all over the margins of books, and yet they feel the complete freedom to skip and skim and find whatever they're looking for. They know how to look for the information that actually matters. Number three, organizing content. Curation often involves placing content into categories or themes. Now, often students struggle with this. They want to know the right way to organize information. And that's because schools typically teach kids external organizational systems. But the idea here is really different from that. It's the sense of classifying on a deeply personal level. It's the idea that it should mirror the way students think. It's a chance to engage in tagging and categorizing in a way that feels meaningful to each student. The next approach is to make connections. The best curators are able to not only organize the content, but make connections between artists and ideas and disciplines that might not normally seem connected to one another. And what that leaves you with is this place where you say, man, I had never considered that before. And they're really pulling from multiple disciplines at this point. As that happens, they will find trends. This aspect of curation is a little more analytical. Sometimes it even involves picking apart data or crunching numbers. It's the idea of looking at information across several spaces and domains and looking for trends. And this is often where someone arrives at a really different counterintuitive conclusion. And it's different than, say, research, where you might have a very targeted focus. You might have a guiding question that's pushing you forward. Here, your idea is that you're more likely to kind of discover the trends as you go. When that happens, you add a unique lens. Now, curators rarely write, in-depth explanations of content. I mean, they typically keep things really short. And there's a clarity and a brevity to the commentary that they add. When it's well done, a curator will seem almost invisible, moving along the snippets of content and taking you on a journey. And yet, over time, you begin to appreciate the subtle personality and voice of a curator. If the critic and commentator sometimes fall into shouting their opinions, the curator is gently whispering people and getting you to leave your distraction and come towards something awesome. Finally, they share the content with an audience. Content curation has the end goal of getting great content into the hands of a larger audience. It is deliberately other-centered, even when the curator is introspective. Sometimes the goal is to provide a set of practical information into the hands of the readers. Other times it's more philosophical. But the idea is still there, that you are finding really good information and getting it into the hands of the people who need it. It's sort of that care of soul concept. So how do we make this happen for students? Well, here are five ways to get started with content curation. Number one, model the content curation process. So notice that very few students walk into school with content curation skills. It just doesn't happen. You have to show them how to do that. And it's because we live in a consumer culture that values speed and amusement over slower, deliberate thought. And so you have to show students how to curate. Number two, let them geek out. Curators are natural geeks. They get excited about ideas and topics within their domain. They engage in research in a way that feels like an adventure. And if we want students to engage in content curation, we need to let them geek out. Tap into their prior knowledge and let them run with it. This is one of the things I love about Genius Hour and Geek Out Projects and 20% Time. It's the idea that you are providing them a space where they can become curators. Number three, spend more time on it. Content curation takes time. Take a look at any master curator and you'll notice that they've spent hours and hours and hours at their craft. There is no way around it. You just need the time to consume. So how do we do that? I think in schools, it means things like silent reading. It means student choice. It means that you allow them to wrestle with how to organize it. Now, it's tough to do in a tight curriculum with, teachers often feel like we don't have enough time as it is, but at least if you can introduce the process and have them practice, then ideally they begin to use the curation process on their own at home. Number four, begin earlier. Traditionally, teachers wait to the end of the year to have students do research projects. And I'm not entirely sure why that's true. If you start at the beginning of the year, then students will slowly learn the art of curation as the year progresses. There are a lot of standards that are informational reading standards in the Common Core reading standards. So what if you spend more time helping them to curate and learn how to curate research? And as they do that, they can engage in those deeper level CCS standards. Number five, let them own the process. They should choose the topics, the questions, the sources they find interesting. This should connect to research, silent reading, blogging, Genius Hour. There's all kinds of places where you can connect it. It's also important to let them choose the platform, though. Curation can happen in a journal or notebook if they want to keep it private. It can happen in a blog, in a podcast, in a video series. In some cases, visual curation sites like Pinterest can work for students who want to organize things in a more spatial manner. Now, one final thought. It's this. You are already a curator. People say things like the teacher is no longer the source of information now that students can curate the information themselves. And this is typically, you know, accompanied by the term guide on the side to describe the teacher's role. And while I see some validity in the sentiment, I think it proves that now more than ever, teachers are actually the ones who should be curating content. They need to be geeking out on the subjects. They need to help students figure out where to go. Yes, they may be on the side, but they are still guides, helping students navigate the terrain for the first time ever. And that's precisely what a curator does. We curate so that we can help students learn the art of content curation themselves. And like I said, teachers are already content curators. We piece together resources and research and ideas, and we develop lessons. We curate that content when we teach. This isn't anything new or groundbreaking. It's what teachers have been doing for years. But the idea that is different is that we should not only be doing this for our students, but we should be doing this with our students. What if we take this art of content curation and we empower our students to engage in it as well? Hey, thank you for listening to the Creative Classroom Podcast. If you enjoyed this podcast, would you leave a review on iTunes/Apple Podcasts or on Stitcher? That would mean the world to me. So thank you for listening. Have an awesome day and go out and make something awesome.